The following is Dan Perkins' appearance on Ken Lovejoy's Charlotte County Speaks radio show in Southwest Florida.
The ultimate smackdown at Whole Foods. Just when you thought it was safe to grab some organic almond butter, it's go time between the yeast-free loaves and the sparkling lemon water. It's the guy stocking up on kale chips and chia seeds versus the guy defending his cart full of grass-fed jerky and cold-pressed green juice. Aisles of gluten-free snacks have never been more dangerous. Don't miss the bone-crushing, non-GMO, ethically sourced showdown. Bring your own tote. Be there.
Isn't it about time for somebody's favorite radio program?
Can we turn the radio on?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
This is rather festive, isn't it?
It's my favorite time of year.
How many days till Christmas vacation?
This is your vacation.
Get to work, Elf.
Solomon Nutcrack!
It's go time.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is Charlotte County Speaks, your chance to let your voice be heard on local, state, and national issues. And now, broadcasting live from a dumpy little warehouse behind a Taco Bell, the host of Charlotte County Speaks, Ken Lovejoy.
Thank you, Johnny. News Radio 1580, 100.9 FM, WCCFradio.com, and on your iHeartRadio app. Charlotte County Speaks, 11 minutes after 10 a.m. on this Monday morning. Phone lines 941-206-1580, and they're occupied right now as we speak with Mr. Dan Perkins. Dan. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, sir.
And there actually was a brawl in the Whole Foods. Of course, this happened in L.A. I don't know if you saw the video. L.A. Whole Foods. It's happening in the Whole Foods, in the ritzy supermarkets now. Violence erupting.
Well, you know, it's... I hate to be a I told you so, but I'm going to be a I told you so.
Okay.
When we started to see the mass invasion, and that's what it was, that Biden brought out by bringing these people in from Afghanistan and 94 other countries from around the world and let them cross the border with no real vetting, I said, we have to understand that we're letting bad guys in and that they're linking up in various cities across the country, and they're not going to be a mass attack. They're going to be one-offs. They're going to be lone wolves, but lone wolves under an objective and a direction. And what we've seen, we continue to see time and time again, that these illegals who are terrorists have come into our country and they're killing our college students. Now we have a situation this morning where the FBI announced that they arrested four people who had planned a New Year's Eve celebration bombing in Los Angeles. Four people, not two dozen, not 300, four people. And we are being picked apart by a cobble of terrorists who came into this country under Joe Biden. And Trump is working at his best to try and find them. But we know that at least 600,000 convicted criminals came into the country illegally over the border. There are probably many, many more. But my point is, we're in for a long haul of these 1 and 4 and 5, maybe 10 people attacking. I mean, look what happened over the weekend. We had National Guard people killed in Syria. We had a mass of people killed in Australia, which, by the way, was touting itself as a gun-free country. They had banned guns, and yet these bad guys were able to get guns, like almost all bad guys can get guns.
Yeah,
they don't buy them legally.
Yeah,
and that is a perfect example to those people who think we need to get rid of guns, because the laws that we would pass to get rid of the guns are against people like me and you who are patriots, who are law-abiding citizens. They're not doing anything about the bad guys getting the guns.
No.
Then we had Brown University attack. You know, if I have a My oldest granddaughter is a senior in high school, and she's applying to colleges, and she's getting into colleges. And I had a conversation with her a month or so ago about when you're looking at cool schools, one of the things you've got to do besides academics and scholarships and financial aid and all that stuff, you've got to look out and see how safe is the school itself. What's the crime rate at the school? What's the crime rate in the neighborhood? And she got into Penn State this weekend. Penn State is one of the top 10 schools in the country with the worst criminal record and attack record in the country.
Location. Well, get her one of those Byrna. You hear everybody advertising those. It's like a tear gas pellet. Legal in all 50 states. It works just like a gun, only it shoots like a little pellet of tear gas. I know Pennsylvania's real stiff on the concealed carry, but you don't need a concealed carry for this.
Right. And I know them. I'm one of their agents. I'm one of their distributors.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but I have been for some time. But,
give her five of those.
I almost had that conversation with her father last night, but I'm going to wait because her school that she wants to get to is Virginia Tech, but her second choice would be Penn State. And I just, she's got to be careful.
Wow,
anyway,
yeah.
my point of all of this is that now we had people killed at Brown University.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a parent and your son or daughter was deciding to put Brown University on his list of where he wanted to go, would you let him apply?
Not now. Well, and of course, you know, I've been to Rhode Island, and it has been known for a long time as one of the most, if not the most, politically corrupt state in the nation. There's a lot of crooked crap that happens in Rhode Island. So I don't know. I don't think I would.
No, I think that there are people just like, would you send your child to Columbia?
No.
Or Harvard, any school that had violent protests against Jewish students.
You're going to DeVry and you're going to like it.
Okay. That's fine. All I'm saying is that what the people don't understand is that parents are making decisions for their children, for their own safety. If I told you this statistics, I apologize for being redundant, but it's too important not to say it again, especially in the sense of the Brown shooting.
Okay.
The Department of Education put out a study of this year's incoming freshman class to colleges and universities across the country. Okay? What they found was that 300,000 students, first-year students, chose not to go to universities in the United States. They went overseas. They went to Europe. They went to Asia. They went to Central and South America for two reasons. One, in those countries, in the European countries, because you're an American citizen, you can get a scholarship, a free ride to college, which is not a bad thing.
No.
And so they're looking at it from a cost standpoint because the cost of going to school in the United States has gotten so prohibitive. But the second reason why they chose to go out of the country, be safer. We got college students making a decision not to go to colleges and universities in the United States because they don't feel safe. 300,000.
Wow.
And so as these attacks continue, and it's all part of a strategy to intimidate the American people.
It ain't working. It's just pissing us off. It's not intimidating us in any way. It might be intimidating some parents from sending their kids there. Yeah, sure. But the people that are perpetuating the intimidation are the ones who are going to lose because people are going to quit going to those schools and the colleges are going to lose money.
Yeah. They're
the ones perpetuating the intimidation.
Right. And I can tell you, my brother, who is a founding officer of a School of Nursing at Providence College in Providence, Rhode Island, tells me that the information he's getting from the various organizations of universities and colleges, both secular and religious, is that the actual number of students going to college this year is below last year. And it's a trend that's been trending for some time. And I think it's a function of cost because it is so expensive. But I also think it's a function of safety.
Yeah.
And you know, you love your children and you love to see them out of the house, but you'd rather not see them come back in a coffin.
True.
And so you gotta you have to make hard decisions, and sometimes your children will disagree with you and argue with you. But remember, if you're paying the bill, you get to decide what happens, at least part of the way. But it's an issue, and it's an issue. When we talk about what's going on, there is, I'm telling you, sketchy news, so it may not be true, but it's at least worth reporting. There is some rhetoric out there that the shooter for Brown College was from Afghanistan. Now,
well,
I've
heard several reports, read several reports, that the shooter yelled out Allah Akbar before he started shooting. But then they tried to blame it on a white guy in the army. They put plaster his name out all over the place, ruin his life, smear his service to the nation, and oops, wrong guy, sorry.
Right. I also think what you're saying is that there's a rush to judgment too quickly in these situations.
Yes.
And I think what's driving that, whether you saw this sidebar story. A professional football team was saying about two blocks from Brown University campus, because they were playing the Patriots over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
They were locked down. They couldn't leave their hotel rooms. He said the guy was being interviewed. I think it was the quarterback, and he said it's scary when you can't leave your hotel room because you might get shot.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of the world that we're in today.
Mm-hmm.
And who, in my opinion, biased as it may be, who's responsible for that? The Democrats.
Oh, without question.
And it's amazing. I mean, Joe Biden thinks we should be doing something about it. We should do something about it. He should just sit down and shut up and go to sleep. One of his advisors, because it was mentioning that this particular person in Brown may have been Afghanistan, a refugee or illegal alien, refuses to comment on the possibility of how the vetting process went.
It didn't.
In bringing all these people.
There was no vetting process.
The vetting process went. It weren't there.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think I want to come back to Australia because I think it's important. It's important that so many people were injured and killed.
Yeah, but why? Four cops. He had four cops, two female cops, four cops total, right there, froze.
Right.
Didn't do a damn thing.
They have the intimidation factor that the government has. When they took away the guns, the pressure was immense, and they have not had the need to adjust to that law until now today, because they're going to have to say, if we had such a great law of taking the guns off the street, how is it these people got these guns and killed and injured so many people?
Well, now you can still. Along with, I'm sure, a lot of guns that were buried, because there's a lot of patriotic Aussies who's like, no way. But you mm-hmm. can still get a gun in Australia, but the hoops you got to jump through are enormous. The permitting and the background and the length of time. So, yeah, but people, again, criminals don't pay attention to gun laws. They're going to get the gun.
Right. That's the whole point. The other point I want to make about this whole intimidation factor, relative to what happened in Australia and what's happening in the country. Back, if I could, just a moment and revisit Minneapolis, Minnesota, and the fraud that may have taken $2 billion of our tax dollars and given them to the Somalians. There was a story over the weekend, you may have seen it, where they interviewed some of the people who were who brought this to the attention of the governor and other people that got some people arrested. But many people responded that when the Somalis came in to apply for the various programs, they were basically, if they were denied or they were given a hard time, meaning they were giving the Somalians a hard time, they played the race card. And they said that they were racist. In fact, they even filed a suit that said they were racist. And what many people who are in the government in Minnesota said, when they yelled at them, they were going to charge them with race problems, they panicked. And so rather than neither confront people who were calling them racist, they capitulated and gave them the benefit programs. So that they were using race to intimidate the regulatory people who were doling out the money, and those people were afraid to do anything because they were afraid of being called a racist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and 500 of those people went and told higher-ups about it, and nothing happened. In fact, some of the whistleblowers got retaliated against for bringing it up.
Right, right, right. Now, before this story broke, when Ilan and was winning because of the Somali population, and they were having the problems with the riots in Minneapolis. Remember those days?
Mm-hmm.
I wrote stories about where else are the Somalians in high concentration. And it so happens that my home state, my hometown, is number two in the nation. And what do we have over the weekend? A story about the same kind of corruption,
yeah,
and intimidation and theft in Ohio,
yep,
as we had in Minnesota.
Yep. And you know why I said this on the air a couple of weeks ago, Ohio is going to be, or last week, Ohio is going to be involved here. And it was just the way that DeWine treated the whole, remember the whole eating cats and dogs?
Yeah.
And the way DeWine went to their defense. And there's no problem here. There's no problem here at all. I think there's the same level of a corruption going and fraud going on in Ohio as there is Minnesota. Maybe not as much, because Minnesota was just blatant about it, and DeWine's got to kind of pretend he's a Republican. So
the whistleblower who I saw interviewed on Friday, which we talked about on my Saturday show, she says that it's actually, she believes, more dangerous and more money taken in Ohio than there was in Minnesota.
Wow, really? Wow.
Yeah, even though there are less people, but there were, and people would go in and say that they had autoimmune system, or they had Alzheimer's or dementia, and they needed help, and they would file for home health care aides and money to pay for that, and it basically, the check got turned over to the Somalians, who used it for whatever they wanted to buy houses and cars and clothes and jewelry, and send it overseas to the terrorists. That's the thing that really burns.
Yeah.
Is that I want to know how much of my money was put in that false program that wound up going to the Somali pirates and Shabab. I want to know. And I think we're entitled to know.
I've heard that that's the majority of the money that funds Somalia right now is the remittances from the U.S.
That wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, the point I want to make here is what we know. This, we know that people from 95 countries from around the world came to the United States through the southern border and crossed into the country as illegals.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we know, how are we going to find out whether it may have been the Somalians in Minnesota and Ohio, but how do we know that there isn't somebody else, Chinese or somebody else, doing the same kind of scam
sure.
in other states, but not part of the Somalian the cartel? So
sure.
I think we've got to take a hard look at the whole Medicare SNAP program, everything, because we may be being fleeced in record numbers and dollars, and I think we have to do something about it. And that will anger the Democrats. So the Republicans are going to have to.
Isn't it funny how the Democrats always just lose their minds when we start pointing out malfeasance and looking for, you know, where all this fraud money's going? They can't stand when you start investigating for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
They hate
mm-hmm.
that. Why is that?
Because they don't want the truth to be told.
Exactly.
They don't want to find. They don't want the American people to find out how corrupt the Democratic Party is, and in the new book that I'm writing, how vicious and violent they are in terms of killing people.
Oh yeah,
it's absolutely amazing. So now, I need to ask you a specific question, and then I have a more fun thing to end the show with.
Okay,
what's your schedule going to be during the holidays? Are you going to do shows?
No, this is my last week. I will be off from the 22nd. I won't be back until Monday the 5th.
Okay, so this is our last show. Well, okay. Well, I'm going to give you a couple of fun things, and then I'm going to wish you Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we'll see you after that.
Okay.
One of my favorite places to shop is Costco. And I know you think it's funny that I'm driving for Uber, but I picked up the lady who's in charge of the food department.
Oh,
food
cool.
concession at Costco.
Yeah.
And she said, we're having a phenomenal year. The president and CEO of Costco, in his quarterly report, mentioned these two things. On Halloween, their stores had a 31% increase over last year in pizzas. Now, think about this number. On Halloween, Costco sold 358,000 pizzas in their stores.
Wow.
Okay. Now, move forward to Thanksgiving. This one, because there's two parts to this story. Costco said they sold, and I'll think about this, 4.5 million pies the 3 days before Thanksgiving. Now, that's 7,000 pies per Costco store. Think about that. 7,000 pies in each store. 4.5 million pies. My son had Thanksgiving. We couldn't go and because of my wife's health.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his wife's family came. They had Thanksgiving dinner for 30 people. And he bought two pies at Costco that were 52 inches in diameter.
Jesus.
that's bigger than, that's 2 more feet bigger than a yardstick.
Yes.
And he bought two of them. And he won't tell me how much he paid for them.
Oh, but yeah, no.
Everybody had pumpkin pie. Whether they wanted it or not, there was plenty of pumpkin pie.
It was an $80 pumpkin pie.
So, are you going to go see your family, or what are you going to do?
No, I'm just using my vacation days.
Okay.
It's a use it. That's my annual. I had the reunion last July, but I usually don't take a vacation till the end of the year. Cause it's okay. Use it or lose it. So I'm using it and, just hanging around. I got a lot of DIY stuff around the house I got to do.
Okay. Well, I want you to enjoy that, but I want to give a public service tip for you, for your audience.
Okay.
And I'll admit that I didn't know this until this past week.
All righty.
If you have people in your audience who are over 65 and are on Medicare, and they're driving themselves to their doctor's appointments, they need to call their insurance company and find out if they have a transportation benefit in their policy. I heard about it because I picked up a woman from a doctor's office and brought her home. I called my insurance company. My insurance company has a benefit, transportation benefit, that they will pay for, not me. They will pay for 50 one-way trips to doctors and to pharmacies and things like that, and it's already included. If you're paying your own Uber transportation costs or you're driving yourself in a dangerous situation, call your Medicare insurance company and find out if you have a transportation benefit, because it could save your life and save you a lot of aggravation.
All right. There you go.
Thank you. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
You too, sir. It's Dan Perkins, ladies and gentlemen. If he's not your Uber driver, check out his website, danperkinsmedia.org. danperkinsmedia.org. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you and your lovely wife. I hope you guys wish you all the blessings in the world.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you after the first of the year.
All right, bud. Bye-bye.
Radio show fun fact. This radio show was voted number one by the readers of Sophisticated Plumbing Magazine. Let's get back to the show.
We'll be right back with Charlotte County Speaks on News Radio 1580 WCCF.
News Radio 1580, 100.9 FM, 1042, just about here on a Monday morning. Charlotte County Speaks on the air. Phone lines 941-206-1580. Wow. Colorado. What the hell? What a bunch of Nazis over there. The warden overseeing the prison where Tina Peters is being held will not release Tina Peters and refuses to recognize President Trump's pardon. That's a ballsy move.
Now I got the clapper for Christmas. How many people have the clapper? Do you know what the clapper is? You better know what the clapper is sitting there in the front row. Let's do the clapper. Clap on, clap off, clap on, clap off the clapper. You see, that last clap's a little faster than the other ones. How about the woman on the clapper commercial? One clap, she's out. I'm in my room, clapping on, clapping off. Parents are screaming at me, stop clapping off up there. Clapping on and clapping off. Lights going crazy in the house. Your brothers don't clap off. Your father doesn't clap off.
News Radio 1580 AM WCCF Punta Gorda and FM 100.9 W265 EA Punta Gorda.
An iHeart Radio station. Guaranteed human.
We're News Radio 1580 WCCF.
Dan Perkins Media presents a unique and exciting program. Truth Starts Now, a conversation with Dan Perkins. The left has taken away your rights to freedom of speech. Truth Starts Now is a platform for you to regain your voice. America and Americans will be better off if we can have civil and respectful conversations about the day's important issues. Now, here's your host, Dan Perkins.
Welcome to the Truth Starts Now. I'm your host, Dan Perkins, and we have an interesting guest today to talk about his book and his writing. It's Matt Newham, and I'm speaking to him just outside of London, England, on the program. And we're going to talk a little bit about him, his books, and his writing style, and where he sees life going. I don't know whether Tony told you or not, but I've published 9 books, 3 of them were children's books.
I've actually read them. Doing some research, and it's actually always nice when you're doing a show like this, when you're talking to a fellow author. There's a kind of
Yes.
kinship that you can't explain.
Yeah, I'm working on a very, I don't want to take a lot of time, but just want to let you know, I've accepted a challenge. I accepted it a year ago. I have a very good friend here in the States who is a greenhorn Irishman. And now most people don't know what a narrowback or a greenback Irishman is, but he was an immigrant, came to this country. He'll be 86 this Thursday, and I started helping him over a year ago on writing his memoirs. And it's a different challenge of helping somebody write it down and put it in a way that people will hopefully understand it. So it's been very inspiring to me, and he's a great storyteller. And you're a storyteller.
I'm a storyteller, but nowhere near as good as the Irish, I have to admit.
Now you have a series of three books, and
It's
you
all going
said
on
in
five, actually.
five. Oh, okay, well, I only
So
saw three.
there'll be five by January.
Okay, all right. I was never had any formal training as being a writer
Nor
and
did I.
creative writing. And I live in Fort Myers, Florida, which is on the west coast of Florida. And unfortunately for me and my wife, we lost our home in Hurricane Ian. It was destroyed. But we lived on Sanibel for 10 years, and they have a introduction to writing mysteries and thrillers. And it was three, a quote in your media kit: "I write because stories have the power to inspire, to teach, and to bring a little magic into everyday life." That's a
Absolutely true.
wonderful quote. Who would you say who you write for?
I would be your bandwidth is very low here. I'm not sure what's going on. You've completely frozen on me. I don't know if you can hear me or not.
You there, Matthew?
Yep,
No,
I'm here. I just got a
you.
message coming up to say that your bandwidth is very low.
Yeah, and I've got it wide open. There's nothing else on. But anyway, sometimes
Okay.
those things happen, and
It happens.
I'm
Yeah,
not smart
I'm
enough to figure it out. So who do you write? Tell me, who do you write for?
I think initially I started writing for myself. My writing's always been part of me. It's been storytelling inside of me more than anything else. I really started, thanks to my little sister. She's 10 years younger than me. And when she was little, she had this wallpaper on her wall with these pictures of dogs and a dog called Spot hiding in the trees and the flower beds. And I used to make up stories to her when she went to bed at night. So the stories were always in me. And life progressed and ended up in sales and marketing. And sales and marketing, I was writing copy and content that was telling a story for people to buy then accounting software. Not the most exciting stuff in the world, but I made a bit of a name for myself in that. And then life progressed, and I'd always written down little stories all my life. And I stumbled across a couple the other day, funnily enough, which I keep thinking to myself, I must do something with. And then around about 12, 13 years ago, a few events happened in my life, and I started writing a story just to get myself out of a very dark space. And I didn't think I could do it, to be honest. I wrote it not intending to be published. And a couple of years later, a young girl saw the item on my laptop. She asked, Matthew, what do you do? Because I was a freelance writer. So, what do you do? What do you write about? Oh, have a look on my laptop. So I opened up my laptop, which basically opened up my world to her. And there was boring stuff. There was white papers and there was marketing documents. But in there was a hidden a little story called Space Ranger Max, which she read and smiled. She was 8, 9, 10 years old. She showed it to her mum. Her mum read it and said, Matthew, you've got to do something with this. It's absolutely brilliant. And that was the point where my writing for myself turned into writing for children.
and writing for a younger audience, but writing to get them reading, because reading is such an important skill they have to learn.
Yes, and so when you wrote your first book, it was for children. Did you have an age group or range that you thought was appropriate for, or any children?
The story started because I was asked by an English teacher in Australia to write a short story so he could talk about space with a group of Australian primary school children, which I guess was 6 to 10 years old.
Okay.
So I based it at that audience, but I also had to remember that at that young age, adults, parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents, older siblings are reading with that reader. So I had to have something in there that also engaged them as well. And somehow or other with Space Ranger Fred, I've managed to do that.
Now, you said you've got, you have 5 books published by New Year's?
Yep, there's 4 books published right now. The 5th one's about to come out in January. That's the, I don't know if you can see it, it's not coming up on the screen. Space Ranger Fred and the Great Galactic Bake Off has come out in the last couple of weeks.
Okay.
And there's 3 more prior to that, all with very, very simple little adventures for a 6 3/4-year-old kid to go on and have some fun along the way.
Right. So you wind up writing for kids, but adults read it too.
The adults read it too, and funnily enough, it was on the second book that I realized that teenagers pick this up. I think that most people have fallen in love with the illustrations, I'll be brutally honest. Richie Williams has been fantastic, but teenagers were picking up the books at one point. And I don't know, I think it was because my son was then a teenager and he was showing them to his friends, and you know, that led to another thing, but it's just the books, I aim them at 6 to 10 year olds, but anyone can pick them up and read them and enjoy them.
Yeah, I my first book was about mythical seals off the coast of Ireland, and the story dates back to the 5th century in Celtic lore. But it's really a story about a mother and a child, even though that the Selkie seal in mythology could take its skin off and become human. But I found the same situation, is that writing 3 children's books on totally different subjects in writing for a certain age group, I was surprised at the number of older children and adults who have read stories.
I think a good story will resonate with anyone of any age at the end of the day.
Right, right. So are you writing anything else but children's stories?
I've written I've done quite a bit of travel writing in the last year or so for a magazine here in the UK, for a business travel magazine. I've got a novel on my desk, which is about to be edited, and then I'm going to be seeking an agent, which is quite scary. So if there's any agents out there, give me a shout. I've got 2 other children's books. I say children's books, they're more young adult. I've got one called Alice Winter and the Winter's Key, which is a story that I just started writing last year for the fun of it. And then I've got another one set in World War II. And then in the last couple of weeks, I've been working on an agricultural book, a farming story, with a farmer from down in Cornwall about a cow that explores the farm, and to introduce farming and agriculture to kids at age 6 to 10 again. Again, it's something that schools don't teach so much anymore. And young kids think that milk grows on the shelf in a supermarket when it actually comes from a cow. They don't really understand. So it's getting those little bits out there as well.
That's terrific. Now, do you self-publish your children's books in the past, or do you
publish? Self-published, and it's a mug's game half the time. It's very hard work.
I know. I've done that myself. I finally got a publisher. But I might have somebody for you. I might have a publisher for you.
I am very happy to talk. I'm talking to you here right now, and I feel like I've known you for a million years. It's a wonderful feeling, actually. I have to admit, it's one of the most comfortable times I've had for a very long time. And when I said earlier, before we started the interview, that when a storyteller talks to a storyteller, there's a bond, there's an instant connect, and you feel it.
Right.
And it's something that you both know you're able to talk about, and your stories don't become silly things, they become reality. And you
right.
start asking each other, how do you get from point A to point B? And how do you fill in the gaps? How do you describe a tree, or how do you describe the ocean? And that's conversation that only authors can share.
Right. The gentleman who I'm helping write his memoirs, I said, when we first started working together, I said, you have to understand that as a writer, we're artists.
Yes.
We paint pictures with words.
Yes.
And if we pick the right words, we pick beautiful pictures. We need to take a quick break here and get a little commercial time. And we'll be back with Matthew after these messages.
I'm Dan Perkins, the author of the great romance novel called Sad Eyes. It's a story of a red-haired, green-eyed Irish lass who was born in Waterloo, Iowa in 1912. Book one takes us through her growth and development and her life decision. She wants to be an ER nurse, and she wants to go to a big city like Chicago to learn. She sees firsthand the devastation of Middle America under the Depression of the 1930s. She is admitted to the nursing program at St. Mary's Hospital on the west side of Chicago. She is first in her class, and amazing events during her 3 years changes her life forever. She moves to San Diego, and in book two, the war comes, and she enlists as a nurse in the Army Nurse Corps. She accomplishes many unbelievable things to support the wounded in the war in the Pacific. Why not consider purchasing both books and giving one book as a great Christmas gift and book two as a Valentine's gift? Sad Eyes is available through your local bookstore or at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. We're having a fascinating conversation with Matthew, two old writers commiserating about the writing process. time goes real quickly when you're doing it. You said you've got a new book that just out a couple of weeks, and then you got another book coming out right after the first year. Tell me about the two books.
The two books. The first one is the fourth book in the Space Ranger Fred series, called Space Ranger Fred and the Great Galactic Bake Off. Don't ask me how I ended up writing about cakes and things like that. I think it's because I've done a lot of ghostwriting for a celebrity chef here in the UK, and I had food going through my head and things like that. And that's a terrific book. It's longer than the first three books. In fact, it's more than three times the length of the first book.
Wow.
So it is a much more of a chapter book, a reader book. It's still got illustrations in it. So you add colour to the book, and suddenly the cost of publishing and production goes through the roof. Only in the last couple of days, I wasn't happy with the first edition that came out. It's there, it's available, but I wasn't happy. And I then sent it out to an expert in book design, and quite a lot of money later, he's turned the book into an 8x5 square book, changed the illustrations around or moved them around, added a few little pieces to it, and turned it into a work of art more than just a book. The price has gone up a little bit, but it's been available. The story's been available for just over a month, but the new version is literally coming out. It hit Amazon. It went live on Amazon this morning here in the UK, mm-hmm. and I think the US gets it live in about 72 hours, something like that.
Okay.
It's been quite a challenge to put it together because of the shape of the book. As we said off air, that as authors, we're artists, and I wanted something that was more of a work of art than just a normal read along book. The book does look, I've seen a couple of PDFs of it and a couple of mock ups of it, and it's really quite something to hold in your hand now. So I'm excited to get the first copies in the next couple of weeks printed. So yeah.
So are you publishing through Amazon's publishing, or
I'm not. I'm publishing it through Ingram Spark, and that allows me as a self-published author to access the retail stores that bit better. They get a slightly bigger margin. I end up owning the books as well. Well, if you do everything through Amazon, the ISBN they give you basically gives them complete control over everything. So
Right.
I learned the lesson to buy my own ISBNs and do it myself. And I have found that Ingram Spark, using something that's not Amazon, has made a big difference to what I can achieve with the books. It's a little bit slower, it's a bit of a learning curve, but I'm really happy about it. So yeah, so the new book's out, Space Ranger Fred and the Great Galactic Bake Off.
Now, do you print the books in England?
I print them worldwide. That's the beauty of Ingram Spark. They're a little bit similar to Amazon. They have publishing and printing spaces all over the world. And in a funny way, Ingram Spark's distribution reach is actually greater than that of Amazon.
Wow.
Not everybody's a big fan of Amazon, I have to admit. And working with these guys at Ingram Spark, the support's been there for a self-published author. Been able to ask a question and get an answer. It's been brilliant.
So the book that's due out after the first of the year, tell us about that one.
That, well, again, you and I were just talking about it. There's people asking, when's the next one? When's the next one? When's the next one? And the next one started by because of Halloween. Halloween came up and we had to put a social media post out or something like that. And I played around with a few words, and the next thing I know is I'd sat down for 5 hours and I'd written 5 or 6,000 words and a story had come out. So coming out in January will be the Space Ranger Fred and the ghostly the ghouls of Een. There's a planet called Een, Een, and they have a party which is the Hallow party, a masked party. So I've got Hallow Een. As a bit of a pun within the storyline, but again, it's another Space Ranger Fred book. It's been written very, very quickly. It will need a couple of edits, but that's aiming to be out by the end of January, with
Have
another
you
one by the end of March.
experimented with AI in writing?
I have, and I don't like it. I know it's there. It comes in handy if you want to just sort of put a few bullet points together. It's good for things like that, but it's creative writing. It's very flat. It can't quite get that little bit of storytelling. It doesn't understand people. It understands words. And it's there, and you can write a book. I've had family members say, "Oh, I can write a Space Ranger Fred book on AI." I said, "Well, go ahead and do it." So they'll take a few pages of my work, plug it in, and see what comes out. And what comes out is complete garbage. So yeah, while it's there, it can be done. And I don't agree with it. I try not to use it anywhere, to be honest. We've experimented with it on social media and things like that, but in terms of writing, I just don't go near it. I say I don't go near it. I use Grammarly, and I guess that's got AI built into it. And even a
Right.
spell check is old school AI, if you like, as well. That's as far as I will go with it.
I'm working on another book at the same time. I met the gentleman who was a retired Phoenix, Arizona sheriff, and he became president of the Peace Officers and Sheriffs Association of America with tens of thousands of members. And I happened to have an opportunity to interview him on one of the shows that I'm on. And I said, after we finished, I said I wanted to talk to him offline. So we talked, and I told him about what I was going to or trying to do. And I said, I believe that the number one issue in the primary election in 2026 in the United States is going to be crime. He said, "I agree."
Yeah.
So I did a rough sketch of a cover, a prologue, and a first chapter, and I sent it to him to see what he thought. He says, "This is phenomenal. How can I help?" I said, "Would you like to co-write it with me?" So I'm now doing something I've never. I'm writing nonfiction with a co-writer.
Yeah, but you're going to fly at it, Dan. You're a natural, and that's the thing. You know, when you if you can write and tell a story, not all stories are fiction.
Right.
But the fact that you understand fiction means that you can make. Probably I can. I know I can. You can make the mundane become interesting.
Yes.
And
yes.
Readable.
When the first book came out, Peter the Little Irish Seal.
I've actually got that open on my other screen at the moment, by the way.
You do?
Okay. Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay. a friend of mine, we're in the financial service business together for a long time. He retired, and I continued, and he was a retired rear admiral, and he had done extremely well, and he was a fairly wealthy man, and he and his wife, along with some other people on Sanibel, created a foundation to support the construction of a new children's hospital. I don't know if you know the geography of Florida very much, but it's a huge peninsula.
Yeah.
And between Tampa on the East Coast and Miami on the West, excuse me, Tampa on the West Coast, Miami on the East Coast,
I was going to say your geography was wrong.
there was no children's hospital between those two points.
Nothing.
Nothing. So if you had a child that was sick.
It's a vast state as well.
Yeah. So if you had a child that needed help, you would either drive to Miami or drive to Tampa. So this gentleman decided he wanted to build a hospital, new children's hospital, and Scott and his family and other people started donating money. And I went to a MOA, Military Officers Association, retired, and a dinner, and I was a speaker, and I talked about what was going on politically, and he told me that he had seen the Little Irish Seal book, and he asked me, could I write a story about a little red wagon? I said,
"Lovely."
I don't know why. Because the hospital that we're building is a red wagon hospital. All the children are transported in the hospital whenever possible in red wagons as opposed to gurneys.
Oh, lovely.
And my wife was with us, and I says, I don't know that I can write a story about a little red wagon. My wife said, "Are you a writer?" "Yes." "So if you're a writer, shouldn't you be able to write about anything?" I said, "Okay." So like you did, I sat down. In 3 days, I had a manuscript done. And I said, it's gorgeous. So they published it, gave it to all the children in the hospital who come in. They get a copy of the book. And it's a wonderful story, but I agree
nice
with you.
You can do things like that. It really is. And
well,
all it's going to take is one child to read that book, and that book might change that child's life.
Yes, absolutely. That was the whole point. It's a scary time to go to the hospital, even for adults, much less small children. So, are you thinking about branching out in any other ways in your writing process?
Yes, we are. We're looking at a video game and an animated series. But we've also been working with a company in South Africa and have partially developed an education platform. Within my children's books, I've always got a little bit of STEM education in there. I sneak it in and keep it as part of the story. And we've now developed an educational platform that helps kids learn, helps kids grapple homework, classes at school, and things like that. And we're now in the position where we're looking for funders and backers to take this whole thing. We got the business plans in place behind it all and things like that. And 2026 is going to be a big year for us going out there to either seek grant funding or crowdfunding or investment funding. It's something that we've got to look at. And it's a global project. It's not just something that's based here in the UK or there in the US. It's something that we're going to take global. If it's one of those go big or go home type situations.
So we've got about 20 seconds left. Tell us how we can get your books.
www.spacerangerfred.com.
And
By
they
far
can
the
buy the.
easiest. That's the central point of it. And then we've got our free comic books on our website as well. So if you go on there, you get a free comic book as well.
Okay, so that they can buy the books in the United States. Are that
They
are
can buy the books in the United States on Amazon or on Ingram Sparks. I will have a link sent through to you so that
okay.
you've got one that's specific to you so that we can set that up as well.
So send me, so also send me your contact information so I can get it to my publisher and see if we can't put something together for you.
I want your contact information. I think I'm going to come over and we're going to go for a cup of coffee somewhere soon.
It was a
It's
pleasure having you. Thank you for joining us.
an absolute pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
A Trilogy Plus One by Dan Perkins, The Brotherhood of the Red Nile.
Dan, you owe me a good night's sleep, and I'm really aggravated about it. I read your books, The Brotherhood of the Red Nile. And I got to tell you, I no longer have to take any no-dos or anything like that when I want to stay awake. I just think about the plots of your books. They are absolutely frightening, devastating, in fact, but some of the best reads I've ever had. And I urge everyone to take a look at it. It's a plausible scenario and one that every American should be absolutely aware of.
Available at Amazon.com.